Earlier today, two of Washington's most distinguished citizens faced each other in a television studio. Senator Richard Neuberger, Oregon Democrat, and Senator Barry Goldwater, Republican of Arizona. Their subject, power and politics. Monitor was listening and recording, and we're now able to bring you this most highly informative discussion. Here is the moderator of the American Forum, Stephen McCormick.
With primary elections taking place throughout the United States, battle lines and campaign issues are drawing tighter between Republicans and Democrats. Our guests on the American Forum today exemplify the vigorous campaigning that will take place between now and election time in November. They're both freshman senators, both making their marks on the national issues discussed and fought in the halls of Congress. Senator Barry Goldwater, Republican of Arizona, member of the Labor and Public Welfare and Interior and Insular Affairs Committees, and a Democratic colleague on the latter committee, Senator Richard Neuberger of Oregon, also a member of the Post Office and Civil Service Committees. Well, gentlemen, the Democrats have charged Republicans with the giveaway of our natural resources. Now, is this purely a political charge? First, Senator Goldwater.
Steve, I think it's a political charge. In fact, I characterize it as the big doubt technique. Half-truths have been used. Statements have been taken out of context to try to create this charge of giveaway. But I think it boils down to two fundamental issues as I study the charges made by the Democrats. Now, one of these will be private power versus public power. It's as simple as that. And the other one will be whether we'll be governed by laws or by the caprices and whims of men. I think it's as simple as that as we boil these charges down.
Let me ask Senator Neuberger the same question.
Well, Mr. McCormick, many of the policies promoted by this administration in the field of natural resources have been condemned almost unanimously by such great outdoor nonpartisan groups as the Isaac Walton League, the National Wildlife Federation, and many others. At Hell's Canyon, the finest power site left in North America has been given away to the Idaho Power Company. And only recently, the House Committee on Merchant Marine and Fisheries, consisting of 17 Democrats and 12 Republicans, unanimously condemned the leasing of to oil companies and gas companies of permits on our wildlife refuges. I think that shows that it's not a political charge.
Mm-hmm. Senator Goldwater, I know that we've been told that the federal government has about 15% of the nation's electricity under production. Do you feel this really worries the private utilities?
Well, as I discussed once in a debate with Senator Neuberger, I don't think the percentage is the thing. I think getting back to this Hell's Canyon argument. Now, that project has been before, at least for the last 6 years, has been before the Congress. It's never been passed. There's no need been shown for the federal government to construct it. It doesn't contribute to flood control, nor navigation control, nor reclamation. Now, here we have a case where private money wants to build these dams. I simply ask, and I ask my colleague, Senator Neuberger, why should the federal government spend the taxpayers' money for a power project when there's private money available to do it? Now, if private money weren't available for this project, I'd say let the federal government move in.
Senator Neuberger.
Well, of course, Senator Goldwater is incorrect when he says, to begin with, that it's not a flood control project. It was recommended by the Corps of Army Engineers. And for one of the major reasons they recommended it is because it would provide nearly 4 million acre-feet of storage on the Snake River for flood control. The proposed private projects would only provide about 1 million acre-feet of storage on a river which has contributed to some of the most serious floods in American history, and right after a year when we've had very serious floods. Furthermore, the private company would not develop nearly as much power as would be generated by the proposed high dam of the federal government. And on top of all that, the private company's rates are about four times that of the wholesale rate of the Bonneville Power Administration, which has such great public dams as Bonneville and Grand Coulee.
Yes,
well, I'd like to challenge my friend on that statement about the cost of power. In 8 REA financed distributors in Idaho, received an average of 2.38 cents per kilowatt hour for electricity during 1953, which is 0.67 cents higher per kilowatt hour of electric service than was charged by the Idaho Power Company, a private utility. And another interesting fact is this, that the Idaho Power Company has a rate, when you're comparing it to TVA, that is only 1/100 of a cent higher than what TVA charges to REAs. I think, after studying these figures, frankly, that all public power, particularly TVA, should be investigated as to why they can't provide cheaper electricity. They pay no taxes and they pay no interest.
Senator Neuberger?
Well, To return to the Hell's Canyon situation in Bonneville, the Bonneville Power Administration, which markets all the federally produced power in the Pacific Northwest, produces and sells power at a little over 2 mils a kilowatt hour, which is the lowest industrial rate, for example, to provide new payrolls anywhere in the United States. When industries that have wanted to establish in the Northwest have tried to get rates from the private power companies, they've been quoted rates 3 and 4 times higher than the Bonneville rate. Furthermore, again, I return to this one basic thing, Mr. McCormick. We are in a period when we have had some of the heaviest snowfall in history, and we have had devastating floods that have taken human life and a vast amount of property damage. I think it's just criminal to sacrifice a power site that could store 4 million acre feet of water to prevent floods and to surrender it in return for 1 million acre feet of storage, which would not prevent the floods that the Army engineers so fear.
Well, of course, the Army engineers have never been able to sell the Congress on that idea. And in testimony that we heard before our committee last year, there's very strong doubt in the minds of all of us
that
there's sufficient water in that river to provide 4 million acre feet of storage.
I can see, gentlemen, that we could talk about this item alone for many, many hours. And I see, too, that in the halls of Congress there's going to be much discussion before it ever gets a little further along than it is. But if you don't mind, I'd like to move to the other side of our subject for today, off power and into politics for a minute. This is 56, an election year, and Senator Goldwater, since you are a member of the Senate Select Committee investigating campaign contributions, may I ask, will the Senate advocate changes in the campaign contribution methods, and do you feel that more stringent laws would work anyhow?
Well, it's a little bit early, Steve, for any member of that committee to say what might happen. We're certainly going to look into all of the aspects of lobbying and all of the aspects of campaigning, including campaign funds. Personally, I doubt seriously that more stringent laws or different laws will change the situation materially. As I've discussed with you previously, I think that campaign donations and the acceptance of them by candidates is a matter of a man's morals. And no matter what law you write, you can't strengthen a person's morals. If he wants to take the money, he'll take it. If he feels that it's wrong, he'll turn it down if he's strong.
Mm-hmm. Senator Neuberger, how do you feel about that?
Well, I favor very much, Mr. McCormick, a proposal which was first made in 1907 by a great progressive Republican president, Theodore Roosevelt. He said the federal government should finance political campaigns to keep our candidates from being committed to private groups. And I favor that. I think it's just ridiculous to say if some little bureaucrat takes a baked ham or a blanket or a deep freeze, for example, that he's done a terrible thing. But a man running for president or governor or the U.S. Senate can be obligated for literally hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars. I think it's a double standard of morality, which in future years people will scoff at and be unable to understand. And I think Teddy Roosevelt's idea ought to be put into practice.
Let me get to this question, if I may. Does the amount of campaign money nowadays mean winning or losing in a tight election fight?
Well, my personal reaction is no. I don't think you can buy the American people. Now, there are some states that it costs a lot of money to campaign in. In my state, it doesn't take a remarkably large sum of money to run for office. I still feel that if the candidate goes out and sees the people, shakes the hands, presents the issues, that he will receive the votes of the people.
But money is important.
Money is important. There's no question of it.
Senator Neuberger.
Steve, Mr. McCormick, I agree with Barry Goldwater that you can't buy the American people. But with money, you can buy the means of getting your side of the story to the people. For example, after the 1952 campaign, the New York Times, a great newspaper which had supported President Eisenhower for election, had 300 correspondents try to find out how much had been spent by each national ticket. And they came up with this total. For the Democrats, $6,847,000. For the Republicans, $18,769,000. That's a 3-to-1 edge for the party that won the election by a big majority.
Mm-hmm. Yet we can go back in history and find where the party who spent the most money was defeated, too. In fact, Dick, I don't think you've told the whole story there. It's been estimated that upwards of $150 million was spent during the last campaign. Now, that would include every contributor and every candidate down into the county and city levels. That's to give the American people listening today some idea of the amount of money that we're talking about. I still say that it doesn't depend so much on money, although you have to have it. It's the person who's running and his ability to get his story across to the people.
Well, I would disagree to this extent. Certainly the person has a great deal to do with it. But today, when people stay home and wait for the message to come in over radio and TV, rather than going to vast groups like they used to and hear candidates like La Follette and Wilson and Teddy Roosevelt, that money is extremely important in reaching the people. Too important, in my opinion, and I think democracy has failed whenever a candidate or a party loses because they don't have enough money.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, what's causing this independent group to get larger? Seemingly each year it becomes larger. And which way do you think it'll swing this way, this year? Senator Goldwater?
Well, to answer the second part first, naturally, I think it'll swing towards the Republican Party. I wouldn't give you any other answer, but I really, really think that. I think the independent voter is growing because there is a growing closeness of the basic philosophies of the two parties. Now, I don't like that. I'd like to see a real difference between the Republicans and the Democrats. I think there are real differences within the parties. There's a real difference, certainly, in the Democrat Party, and while there is a small difference within the Republican Party, it doesn't compare to the great difference between the North and the South,
Barry,
and the Democrat Party.
Wouldn't you say this, though, Barry, that the average American does not feel his party membership very strongly, that political affiliation, membership in a party, is not as important to him as principles. And I think that oftentimes the extremes of political oratory tend to repel people and to claim all virtue for one party and all vice in another. And I tend to believe that there is a relatively small group that is the hardcore of each party that will vote Republican or Democratic come what may, but that the vast mass of people will drift back and forth as policies seem important to them.
I'd agree with you on that.
You mentioned unity. Now, does unity in a political party often breed overconfidence, or does lack of it indicate an uncertainty, perhaps, and cause defeat?
Well, when you're talking about a political party, I must assume that you're talking about the group of the party or the hardcore of the party that does the work. That's where unity really matters. Now, whether or not, as Dick has suggested, 100% of the Republicans stay together or 100% of the Democrats stay together, I don't think would answer your question. But if you were to ask if unity is important in the working end of the party, certainly it is, because they're the people that get out the votes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it breeds overconfidence. I think a lack of it will certainly defeat candidates.
Senator Neuberger.
Well, I think it's the American way not necessarily to have so much unity. I think within a party you ought to fight out these matters and to find out what policy is best. I don't think it hurt the Republican Party to have a very hard fight between Eisenhower and Taft in 52. And it certainly didn't hurt Harry Truman in 48 to have the Dixiecrats and the Henry Wallace progressive movement split away from him after terrific turmoil. I think that when you do have a hard fight over policies and people feel strongly, that tends to bring these principles, and if they're the right principles, to the attention of the electorate.
Senator Neuberger's party is undergoing a very drastic upheaval at the present time, and it's very difficult for members of his own party to say what the Democrat Party principles are or will be. You have the principles of the Northern Democrats and the principles of the Southern Democrats. Now, which side will be resolved on, we have to see.
Well, I think it was Josephus Daniels, you know, speaking of our fight over civil rights, which I'm sure that's what you referred to, Barry. I think it was Josephus Daniels, who was Franklin Roosevelt's Secretary of the Navy, who once said that the Democratic Party was the only political party in America that was big enough to have a fight and still win an election. We had a big fight in 1948, and we won the election. The Republicans, for example, had a big fight in 1912 between Teddy Roosevelt and Taft, and they lost the election. Our party is the party of all the people, of the straight across the board, of all groups of people, not of every person, of course. We can have a fight and still win the election.
You think you'll do that this year?
Well, I'm not the seventh son of a seventh son, and only that kind of a person can prophesy, but I hope we will.
Well, you've never had a fight quite like the one you're having now, and I think disunity in the Democrat Party is probably the greatest obstacle you're going to have to winning elections.
Well, I don't know whether that's an obstacle or not, but I believe we will come up with the right kind of a plank on civil rights, which will be to uphold the unanimous decision of the Supreme Court, and I think that that will impress the American people as being the proper stand.
I don't think it'll impress the Southern brethren of your party, though.
Well, we can win the election without the South if they feel that the United States Supreme Court should not be obeyed. We did in 1948 without a large segment of the South.
Well, I seriously doubt that you could win the presidential election this year without the Southern Democrats being with you.
Well, I prefer to think this, Barry, that a vast majority of the Democratic voters and members in the country are the kind of people who would rather lose the election than compromise on so basic a principle as human liberty and the rights of man.
Dick, I've never seen a Democrat in my life that liked to lose an election.
Well, I might say that I believe that there are things more important than winning an election, and one of them is the basic liberties of all Americans.
Do you feel you have a distinct advantage, Senator Goldwater, because you do have your team now of Ike and Dick all set? Do you have this great advantage over your opposition?
Oh, I wouldn't say that it's the fact that we have a team is a great advantage. In fact, it might be a disadvantage in that the Democrats now know that President Eisenhower and Dick Nixon will be the ticket, and they will begin to shoot their big guns at them now, where if the vice president held off his announcement or the president held off his announcement, there would have been some doubt, mighty little, and they would have been rather reluctant to start shooting. And now the licenses have been issued, the guns are loaded, and we expect the full blast of the charges.
And I gather, Senator Neuberger, that will follow?
Oh, I believe that the American people vote on great principles of government, and I think the Republican Party, of course, likes to concentrate on rather superficial things like personalities. But I think the basic principles, what's going to happen to our farm people, the fact that it was announced in the New York Times today that in 1955 corporation profits were up 32%, but farm income still dropped substantially. I think those kind of things are more important than something superficial like a personality. This isn't a movie casting. This is going to decide great principles of government.
I agree with Dick on that, and I think that the American people are fully cognizant of the issues, and it's not going to be a personality campaign at all. For instance, you mentioned the farmer. The farmer knows that he didn't do good under the Democrat administration until two wars came along. The farmer knows that he's never been equal to his professional or his industrial brother except in times of war. And I think he appreciates the fact that we have a man in the White House who had the political courage to say to the farm people of this country, this bill is no good for you. We'd rather have a better one that will really help you. Now, as far as the industrial brother having his profits up, I don't think the Democrat Party is against the corporations or businesses of this country making money.
The Democratic Party is against having one segment of the population prosper, namely the owners of the great corporations, while our farm population suffers and goes down. And you talked about the farm population prospering only in war.
That's right.
The farm population of this country had far higher income between 1945 and the outbreak of the Korean War than it has now under this Republican administration. There was no war between 1945 and 1950.
As a total, you're correct. But the per capita income of the farmer is up 7.5%
since 1940. Because so many people have had to leave the farm,
Dick,
because they've been going broke.
You know that that's a phenomenon that's been going on in this country. In fact, it's going on in every country of the world. It's been going on here for 200 years. I come from a farming community, from farming state, and we have since 1950, I think, dropped some 13,000 people from the farm rolls, but our farm income is up and the per capita income is up.
Well, I think it's a very tragic thing for this country. It's one of the things that led to the downfall of the Roman Empire, that the little small family, the small man on the land, has been forced off by economic conditions. And I think the policies of this administration are tending to accelerate that at a faster rate than ever before in the history of our country. And I deplore it. I think it's too bad.
The truth of the matter is, though, that this farm program that the farmers have been under in this country for many, many years never produced the results it was supposed to produce, except in times of war, when demand was so astronomically high that the farmer could hardly produce enough. Now, immediately war was over, the farmers started going into industry. The lands have to go into mechanized farms in many areas.
That wasn't true between World War II and the outbreak of the Korean hostilities. There was no war then.
Our per capita income is up today, over that period. Now, you
yes,
talk about
total.
The
farmer's gone down.
Well, that's been going on for 200 years. Now, the program...
Not to the trend... as compared to the rest of the population that it is today, never before has the farmer been so isolated into virtual depression status, while big business is having the greatest bonanza it ever enjoyed.
The farmer has never been in a state of prosperity since the beginning of this country. Even in times of war, the farmer that you're talking about has not enjoyed what you and I would call unusual success in his own field. Now, my argument is this, that if the farmer didn't prosper under this program of high parity for all of these years, why not give it up and try something else? The farmer's smart. He knows that. That's why the farmer's back of President Eisenhower on his veto.
It'll remain to be seen whether he is back of the veto. We haven't yet learned that.
I gather that each of you feel you'll get the farm vote this fall.
Oh, I would say I'm not going to be dishonest with myself or the Republican Party and say that all is milk and honey out in the farm area of Iowa and South and North Dakota and Minnesota. We know we have trouble out there, but we have confidence in the American farmer that he's not going to be hoodwinked by Democrat claims that their program did something for them. It took two wars to make those farmers prosperous, and I don't think the farmer wants war as a method of obtaining prosperity.
I think the farmer has never been so isolated from general prosperity elsewhere as he is today, and he isn't participating in it.
Well, gentlemen, in addition to issues and personalities in the campaign, I have this question to ask of you, since you're both very conscious of politics. A primary is a waste of time, since seemingly political candidates are still picked by the political leaders. Is that too big a question to throw in here today? Senator Neuberger, how do you feel about it?
Well, I believe in the party primaries. My state was the first state ever to have direct election of U.S. senators. You know, it was only about 35 or 40 years ago the senators were all appointed. And I don't believe in the convention system. I'd like to see a nationwide primary system whereby the people pick the men who are nominated for president rather than convention delegates who are more susceptible to being controlled by a small group.
A nationwide primary.
I would. I voted for, I think it was Senator Langer's amendment, or Senator Lehman's, I don't recall which, to provide for that a few weeks ago in the Electoral College
debate. What do you think of that, Senator Goldwater?
I believe in the primary system. My own state doesn't nominate by the convention system. It's an open primary. In fact, I think the primaries should be more open than they are. The best part of a campaign in which you can bring out the most about your eventual opposition is during the primary period. Now, as to having a nationwide primary for president, I'll have to disagree with Dick on that, although I will admit that my reasons for disagreeing are not as solid as I'd like them to be. In other words, I'm in a position of flux on that. I can be changed one way or the other.
Well, it seemed to me that if it's right to nominate a United States senator by an election, it's right to nominate a president by an election. In other words, why not then have county conventions in all 36 counties in Oregon or whatever number of counties there are in Arizona? And I do not believe in the convention system in this country today.
Senator Neuberger, with the Democrats now having a number of candidates, do you feel that you can win with a candidate with a sort of moderate approach, or must you have a flaming crusader to overcome this the Ike and Dick team?
Well, Mr. McCormick, I have a particular definition of moderate. I do not believe the Democratic candidate should be moderate in program. I think he should have a very bold, forthright, positive, liberal program, but I think he should be moderate in expressing it. And I think if you look back over the great political orators of history and who influenced the people, Jefferson, Lincoln, they were bold in their thinking, but moderate in their expression, and that's what I like to think of as the type of man whom we will nominate.
Moderate. Now, do you feel moderate describes the president, Senator Goldwater?
No, I have often stated that I think that President Eisenhower is probably the only true liberal in this country today in American politics that would conform to the old and accepted definition of the word liberal. By the same token, I'm a conservative, but I'm certainly not a conservative of the old school who people like to think takes their money out and buries it in tin cans. I think that President Eisenhower could best be termed as a liberal in the Republican Party. Now, with your question about the moderate candidate, I was frankly disappointed to see candidate Stevenson leave his moderate position, if that's what you wanted to call it, because I'm convinced that in this country today, there's a great swing towards the conservative side being reflected all over.
Well, I'm quite interested to hear that the president described as a liberal. I think the president's a very fine man, and I certainly admire him personally, but if the president is a liberal, that isn't my definition of a liberal. For example, the president recently sent his emissary up on Capitol Hill to oppose extremely moderate reforms in the Social Security laws, reforms to allow women to retire at a slightly younger age and to pay increased disability benefits, which would benefit millions of people in a humanitarian sense. And if it's being a liberal to oppose such a thing as that, or if it's being liberal to run in 1952 on a platform opposed to federal aid to our schools in view of the pittances paid teachers and the need for new classrooms, then my definition of a liberal is sadly awry.
Well, I think that's probably true, Dick, with all due respects to you. The historic definition of a liberal is a man who is interested in more freedom for the individual. Now, the legislation that you've just described as the president being against, and you think it's liberal legislation, actually is going to result in more federal control. And as you build federal bureaucracy, you destroy the freedom of the individual.
Do you think federal aid to schools would result in federal control of schools?
I think eventually it certainly would.
Well, I don't think there's any demonstration of that. We've had federal aid to higher education in the Morrell Act since President Lincoln's administration in 1862, and they haven't controlled our colleges.
In the form of land grants over which the colleges have control. The government doesn't enter into it. Take the vocational training program that was written, I think, in 1916. Today, you conform
or you don't get the money.
Well, you're more conservative than the late Senator Taft, who was known as a great conservative. And I think in 1949, he sponsored a very generous and far-reaching bill for federal aid to schools. And I only wish it had passed.
He had a lot of his Republican colleagues against him on that,
because,
too.
Yes, because you see, the majority of the Republicans are even far to the right of the late Senator Taft. That's one of the things I've been trying to point out.
He was quite a liberal, if you'll study his legislation and study his debates. I'm getting at the fact that today we accept as liberals men who are actually are not liberals. Men who are, while in their own hearts and own minds, I'm convinced, are working for more freedom. They're setting up an octopus here in Washington that's going to control the lives of the American people.
Well, I can't.
I want to see less federal government, not
I can't
more.
Believe, Barry, that trying to give our school children adequate classrooms and getting them out of fire traps is a danger to liberalism. I think to do otherwise is a danger to our country.
I would, being on that committee and having sat through months of hearings, I'm convinced the states themselves, almost all of them, can do a much better job in education. We in Arizona do an outstanding job, and we're not a rich state.
We don't have the resources to do it.
We're not a rich state in resources or money. But we have the third best school system in this country.
Well, the White House Conference on Education disputes you completely in the statistics they developed. I'm sure of that.
The White House Conference should have sat through 3 months of hearings listening to the states, and listening to states that spend as low as 77 cents per capita on education, and compare it to states that spend as high as $170 and $80 per
capita. I must interrupt, gentlemen. I'm sorry our time is up. Our guests have been today, and we thank them very much, Senator Barry Goldwater, Republican of Arizona, and Senator Richard Neuberger, Democrat of Oregon. The nation's first discussion program, the American Forum, is now in its 27th year, founded and produced by Theodore Granick. This is Steve McCormick bidding you goodbye.
1 week from today, our guests will be Congressman James Davis, Democrat of Georgia, and Congressman Kenneth Keating, Republican of New York. They will discuss the civil rights crisis in the South. For reprints of today's discussion on the American Forum, send 10 cents to Ransdell Incorporated, Printers and Publishers, Washington 18, D.C. That's Ransdell Incorporated, Printers and Publishers, Washington 18, D.C.